Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you making this podcast part of your day. Make sure you subscribe if you want more and leave us some feedback. Away we go.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
Jim Meehan, spokesman review in Spokane, covers Gonzaga basketball like no other. Must read, must follow. Joining us now. How are you, sir?
Doing well. How are you, John?
Doing well. It's a weird season. I've got mad respect for the coaches out there that have got their teams focused and playing well, and certainly Gonzaga falls in that category. How focused do they feel for you?
Well, they seem pretty in tune. They have kept their intensity, their sharpness, their motivation throughout the year. They haven't really had a stinker, per se, where they just didn't show up. They've had some down stretches and, some slow starts and those kind of things. But the majority of the time, they come out ready to go, whether they're favored by 30 over a WCC team or they're playing somebody like Iowa, number three on a neutral floor after a 17-day break. They've been pretty good on the focus, and now that they're getting closer to the finish line, I'd expect that would get even better.
How do they stay sharp, given that they're probably in their own conference not going to get the kind of test that they'll get deep in an NCAA tournament?
Well, one of the ways they do that is they started doing this maybe with the 2017 team that got to the national title game. They call them Competition Mondays, and it's kind of very similar to what you've probably heard about Pete Carroll and the Seahawks for the last decade, where they line up their best guys on each other instead of the scout team or that type of situation, and they go at it, and they keep score, and they scrimmage. And with Gonzaga's team this year, they do have some depth. They do have some, guys on the bench who don't play a lot but are pretty good players. And I think in the long run will be very good players for them. It's just there's not many minutes out there when you get past the first eight or nine guys. So they go at it pretty good on Mondays. I think that helps keep them sharp. I think Mark Few has been down this road so many times in the WCC, where they're winning by 20 most nights, and they've got to find a way to keep these guys on task and improving and all those things. And I think one of the latest things they've done in that regard is defensively. They've really picked it up here the last couple of weeks and now rank inside the top five in efficiency on that side of the ball with their offense. Makes them a pretty formidable outfit.
Gonzaga, certainly the brand in men's basketball speaks for itself. We're talking to Jim Meehan, who covers Gonzaga basketball for the Spokesman Review in Spokane. You pointed out in your latest piece that they're 15-5 in their last five NCAA tournaments, two Sweet 16s, two Elite Eights, one title game appearance. If they never break through and get that national championship, will that hang over their head?
Oh yeah, I mean that's the ultimate goal. I think Mark Few hates to kind of put it all in one basket. He hates the you have to win it or it's a failure of the season. He kind of elevated into this last 7-8 years where they're just right there every year. He always talks about the journey and it's 5 months and those kind of things. But, deep down, he's also admitted that that's how you do get judged. March is where, Hall of Fame careers are made and national championships and legends and all those things. And I think Mark's probably safe in terms of the Hall of Fame. His credentials and what they've done at Gonzaga is one of the biggest, one of the greatest stories in college basketball this century. and maybe going back a lot of years before that. I mean, it's just unheard of what they've done. But that's where the hard grading comes, the NCAA tournament, and they've done very well the last 5 years, and it's kind of a shame last year's got canceled because they were going to be a number one seed. They're going to play two times at home if they'd won, or in Spokane, I should say, in the opening rounds. And they had a pretty good squad. I think they were going to be right there with the favorites, you know, probably top three or four favorites to give it a go last year. So that's what it will come down to, what they do here in March. And if they get to April in that title game, that's certainly the program's goal.
We had the University of Portland Athletic Director Scott Lakem on this show last week. He said there was some talk about Gonzaga and BYU not playing in the WCC tournament. How real is that? Is that just discussion that's going on, or is that a real strategy that sits out there for Gonzaga?
I think there's been discussion mainly around, from Gonzaga's point of view, from playing the tournament in Vegas. They have some real reservations about that. Because it's not just one tournament, it's two. You've got the women's tournament down there, so you're taking 20 teams to Vegas for the same site for a 4 or 5 day stretch. So they're worried about that in terms of the COVID-19, the pandemic, and what it could mean, you know, kind of that following week when you've got to pass 7 tests before you can go to Indianapolis, let alone compete. So I think that's their concern about that issue. From what I hear, and Mark talked on a podcast this morning, it doesn't sound like it's going to change, at least at this point, that he anticipates it'll be in Vegas. And it sounds like the Zags are going to play. They've never had any problem wanting to play. It's just they want to try to do it in a safer manner. They have a lot at stake here in the next 3 weeks. And I think they want to get to that starting line in the NCAA tournament, just like everybody else. That's what you want. Everybody playing, all the best teams there, and nobody sitting out because they had a kid test positive during the tournament. So at this point, I would expect that it'll be in Vegas. And I expect that Zags will be there. In this type of season, though, with how many times they've changed their schedules and game times and what network they're on or what have you, that nothing is set in stone, but that's what it looks like.
Jim Meehan is our guest, covers Gonzaga basketball for the Spokesman Review. Jim, give us an idea of how this team is constructed, how it's built, where are its strengths, how is it different maybe than the team that you know, played deep in the tournament a couple few years ago. I remember Oregon and Gonzaga, you know, it was really cool to see two teams from our region in the Final Four. How is this team different?
This team is pretty elite offensively. I mean, they have put up some numbers on good teams that kind of pride themselves on defense and toughness and tradition. Kansas, they scored 102 on Kansas. 98 on Virginia, which you just wouldn't think there'd be enough possessions to do that, but they turned over Virginia quite a bit, got their running game going, and scored a bunch of points there. I think 87 on West Virginia, which is always a physical battle. Iowa gets up and down, and the Zags had 99 in that game and probably would have been well over 100 if they'd hit their free throws. So they have – it's kind of a unique – system in that a lot of times I don't think they're calling plays so much as they just come down. They've got three or four good ball handlers, Jalen Suggs, Andrew Nembhard, Joel Ayayi. They can really operate off of ball screens. They've got a big guy inside, Drew Timmy, that just has every move you can think of. He's kind of a nightmare guy you guard in City League, but with a 6'10", 235 frame on a college floor, he can really score it. So they're pretty good inside and out. Maybe the one thing that they haven't done that past teams have done very well is shoot the three. I don't think they're necessarily bad at it. They're in the mid-30s. They've got a great shooter in Corey Kispert, who's going to probably be the WCC player of the year. He can really hit the threes. And then the other guys can, but they're more streaky. It's not as consistent. as they probably like, but they don't really rely on it. Their majority of their field goal attempts are in the lane with Timmy and Kispert and Ayayi Cutton and those guys, Nembhard and Suggs, coming off ball screens. They get into the rim and finish pretty well in there, and that's where most of their points come.
Coaches will always talk about wanting to play their best basketball in March. And how close do you, Gonzaga, feel to you to, are they peaking? Is it hard to tell because of who they're playing? Where do you see this team right now versus maybe earlier in the season?
Well, I do think they've gotten better defensively. But, you know, as you mentioned, it's hard to tell when you're playing San Diego and you're favored by 32. Or you're playing a St. Mary's team that just isn't the normal St. Mary's team. I mean, the Gales have had great teams for a decade and a half and very skilled offensive teams. They just don't have the weapons this year. So that kind of leaves a little question in your mind maybe, but offensively, nobody has really slowed them down. St. Mary's was about the only one to do so, and they just worked the clock so much and try to take care of the ball that the possessions go down. So those are, that's the issue, is how battle tested they are. You know, they don't get a knockdown drag out every day like you do in the Big Ten or the ACC or some of the other leagues. But most years, BYU and St. Mary's, at the very least, are pretty good clubs and pretty good tests. Just they've dominated those teams this year, and that maybe says something in itself. BYU's top 20 in the net. Pretty good team. Going to be an NCAA tournament team at this point. But that's what the 2017 team faced as well. They just mowed people over. And when they got into a tight game at the end of the regular season, they lost to BYU. But still, we're able to, come back in the NCAA tournament in about a minute and a half from winning that game against North Carolina. So you'd probably like to see more tests. Just so you feel comfortable in a tighter game, but not sure they're going to get them.
What's it like to cover a program like this in a town like Spokane, where people are rabid about it? And I know people are distracted with the pandemic and everything that goes on. But what's it like to cover this team?
It's very interesting. You can't write enough to fill the paper. I mean, people just want more and more, and they want to know about every aspect of the program. It's just so different this year. You're running into it down there, I'm sure, too, that you don't have any, you're not doing locker room interviews. You're not pulling a coach aside at practice and talking and getting background and those kind of things. You're just relying on a couple of Zoom calls a week after games, maybe 5-10 minutes with a player and a coach, and that's about all you have. So you kind of work with what you get and try to do your best. But it's kind of be nice if it was a normal year with an open locker room. You get to know the players better. You get more interesting angles and stories and backgrounds that you can use. But just like everybody else, you got to figure out a way to do the job.
Yeah, it's interesting because I'm looking at the NBA and the NFL and some other entities, and I'm thinking they're going to figure some things out from this as far as coverage, where I don't know if locker room access is coming back in some of these leagues. Do you get a sense that some of the programs are looking around going, hey, this is a better way to do it because we can compartmentalize our locker room or keep players away from media?
I wouldn't be surprised, but, man, I would hate that. That would just make it all cookie cutter almost. And that is, Gonzaga, to their credit, for as long as I've covered them, which, off and on, I started in the 99, the first run in the tournament, helping out with our coverage, and then full-time about 12, 13 seasons, they have had an open locker room, home or away, after every game. And not a lot of programs do that anymore. But I think that Gonzaga trusts their kids and who they recruit and what they'll say standing in front of a tape recorder or a microphone or a cell phone, whatever. So that has been an absolute joy to deal with, not only for what you produce work-wise, but you at least get to know the guys in a little different setting or get to, you know, just talk about anything and not necessarily basketball, you know, off to the side in the locker room. So I hope that never goes away, but you're right. There's probably some teams that are going to use this, some leagues that are going to use this to kind of limit access again.
Yeah, and I kind of feel the same as you. I feel the same as you. I mean, our job is to help, you know, tell the story and let people get to know players and humanize them. And it is extremely difficult to do in a Zoom group interview. And, you know, like you, I'll be in a locker room talking to a player, and if some other TV camera comes up and interrupts that interview, I'm annoyed by it, you know, and because that's a one-on-one, but. The ability to get that one-on-one has really been inhibited. So how does that kind of change what you've done this season? Like, how have you adapted amid all that?
Well, just try to set up, you know, phone calls through the SID department if I get guys one-on-one on a phone call at least. Spend a lot of time trying to just talk to maybe high school coaches of these guys to see if there's something interesting from back there, or parents of these guys. I did a story on Andrew Nemhard, the kid from Florida, transferred from Florida. He's from Toronto area, and talked to his dad for quite a while, and he had some great stuff, some great background on Andrew that just try to make a story different and interesting, and what makes these guys click. It's not easy anymore in this pandemic. You're just, you know, you're dealing with, you might get in one question in a Zoom call, you know, because there's 15, 20 other people on there, and they're all trying to do their job. So it's a challenge, but just keep trying to find ways to put decent coffee out there, interesting coffee, and hope, you know, in a few months or next season that we get back to normal.
All right, last question. If Gonzaga does get to the national championship game, what is going right for them as a team? Like, what element do you think, hey, they got there, Jim. What would you expect to have gone right for them?
I would say defensively they'd have to be on their game. Offensively, that seems to take care of itself. The way they score the ball, the way they shoot the ball inside the arc. And I think a lot of that revolves around, you know, not just the guards. They've got a great collection of guards, just like Baylor. But a lot of that revolves around Drew Timmy as well. He's kind of their only big that you can throw it to, and he's going to score it most of the time. He's that talented. And so he has to stay out of foul trouble, which he's done very well this year. That was an issue a year ago, not so much this year. So they have to keep him on the floor, and I'd say they'd have to really guard like they've been guarding here the last few weeks, because they're probably not going to score 90 or 95 in NCAA tournament games against the better teams. So they're going to have to get it done at the other end of the floor, too.
Jim Meehan, you're the best. I appreciate you joining us and sharing your expertise.
Thanks, John.
All right, there he is from the Spokesman Review, covering Gonzaga basketball, the Zags. Sitting atop the polls, look like a one seed all the way, but it's hard to tell. It's always hard to tell with them because of who they're playing in their conference. And I'm still not sold that they will be with the rest of the WCC in Vegas. Like, I do think if they sit out, they're still a one seed. So what is the advantage for Gonzaga going and risking injury and risking a COVID infection in front of the NCAA tournament? It's a weird year. It's a different year. As Jim pointed out, they're planning to go at this point. But will they show up? We'll find out. Leave it here. Every day on the show, we do the Big Splash. It's the one thing you need to know.
This is the one thing you absolutely need to know today.
Look at it. Where? Down there. Must be
the Big Splash. Brought to you by the Exergen Twice Daily Thermometer.
Cam Newton got trash-talked at a 7-on-7 tournament, and that video went viral. I felt for Cam as he was having it out with a teenager. I got a teenager in my household. Maybe you have one in your household. But today that teenager apologized, said he's since spoken to his parents, I think, who were terribly embarrassed by their kid trying to show up Cam Newton. You know, trash talk is probably part of those 7-on-7 events. Fact, it is. Like, you talk to players who play in them, any sporting event, trash talk becomes a part of it. But Cam Newton was out there volunteering his time, trying to help kids. You know, he didn't need it. He's got $75 million in earnings, and he's getting trash talked by a kid like he's in some kind of...
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.